Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. I decided to visit with you tonight, and I had another message I was leaning heavily towards, being Father's Day, but I thought a Sunday night crowd and a group that really is here to fellowship as believers tonight, I want to talk about the things that help to build strong relationships. Tools that a father uses. Tools that a believer uses. The particular focus of the text is 1 Peter 3:7, is tools that a husband uses in his relationship with his wife. And I thought tonight it would help us to be able to focus in some of these areas. And so let's look at this, and I want to pick thoughts out of this. 1 Peter 3:7, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them. Now, the instruction to the woman was given in the first six verses. Her attitude has to be right. Her adoration has to be right. Her adornment has to be right. And then we come on down to the point where now, likewise, ye husbands. Likewise is referring back to chapter 2 and the previous section in chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, where the wife was instructed to be like the Lord Jesus Christ in 1 Peter chapter 2. Now, what is instructed particularly to the man? Likewise, your husbands, dwell with them. Number one, the tool of time. Live together. Life is a dash between dates. I was speaking at a church. I got there about 30 minutes early. There was a cemetery right near the church, so I went and parked in the cemetery, and I looked at tombstones. There was a date, a dash, and a date. 1940-1968, 1952-whatever. And that dash between those two dates represented everything that was that person's life. And what was happening in that dash? I guess every one of us, if we could go back and relive the first part of our dash, we would. Most of us would. Because we learn some things. We have regrets at times and what we could have done differently, how we could have treated parents differently, or how we could have been a more aggressive witness, or how we could have made better choices. But life is that dash between dates, and what happens in that little dash determines everything as we look into eternity. In that dash, you accept Christ or you reject. During that dash, you accept Christ and grow, or you accept Christ and stagnate. For the believer, he will be tested at the bema, the judgment seat. For the lost person, at the great white throne judgment. But that dash will be brought up before those places. How did we live after we were saved? And sometimes we take time for granted. So we think we have plenty of time. But yet it's not always the case. Some of you remember, and I think Brother Arrowwood's church in Ohio, Troy was praying when my wife Charlene had her aneurysm. It was about 3 weeks before 911. And I was in Los Angeles going to the airport with a couple other staff guys, and our kids called and said, we have mom at the hospital. We don't know what's wrong, but they might keep her overnight and observe her. And Charlene had never been sick. And I thought, I didn't think it was serious, because I thought probably maybe an appendicitis maybe or something. But we did stop and pull off the freeway in Los Angeles, and we prayed. And I said, if anything changes, then let me know. Let Northwest Airlines know when we land in Minneapolis, then I can get any further word. Well, we landed in Minneapolis, gated, and I stepped out into the terminal, and I heard the announcement for my name and pick up a white courtesy phone. And my heart just sank, because I knew that was not a good thing. One of our staff took the call and basically came back and was as white as a ghost. And he said, Charlene's heart exploded. Well, that wasn't what had happened. Her descending aorta had dissected, but they got the wrong message. And I was standing in Minneapolis Airport thinking that time frame, that dash that Charlene and I had together was gone. And I'm saying, God sovereign, human panic. And it was up and down that quickly. It wasn't like 5 minutes here and five. It was God's in control, human panic. God's in control, human panic. And I said, God, I trust your sovereign control. I trust you in this, but I beg you to let me keep my wife. Thinking she was already gone. Got in the plane. Sam Horn was sitting across the aisle from me. I stared out the window. I didn't want the plane to land. I just wanted to stay up. I didn't want the reality I was going to have to face. That timeline was gone in our relationship. And when I deplaned, Tim and Barb Corey, friends of ours, were there. Met me down there. I said, Charlene is still alive. And in the meantime, while I got in a plane to fly to Los Angeles, she was being put into a scan machine, and the scan showed that her descending aorta had dissected. They were going to put her in the hospital overnight. My daughter Lisa said, you're not doing anything of the sort. You're going to find out what's wrong. And they got so mad at her, they ordered a body scan. She would have died in that room that night, filling up with blood. And the nurses and the emergency room people who knew Lisa said, your mom is not going to live. And we want you to have a chance to say goodbye. Now, you're a child. They said, Father's Day, put your dad there. You have 5 minutes to tell your dad everything you want to tell because the dash is ending. What would you say in that 5 minutes? Why did you make me take that garbage out when I was still on the computer? I don't think so. Suddenly, the love that you really had inside was beginning to pour out. The crying and the clinging to one more minute of life. But that one more minute is what we always take for granted. And then Charlene was told that we're going to try to get you to Green Bay. We don't think that it is possible with this condition to get you there over 100 miles from Iron Mountain, Michigan to Green Bay, Wisconsin. And so they said, we want to give you a chance to say goodbye to your children who were now there with Corey's and a few others gathered at the back of the ambulance. The helicopter had to land 70 mile an hour winds. They couldn't fly. So they loaded her in the ambulance, and that was of the Lord too. And so Charlene told my daughter Tammy, told her first where our $58 was hidden. And that was our retirement plan. It's down to $26 now. She said, tell Dan I'm okay with this. Sorry it's happening now when school is beginning. And then she was loaded in, and then she doesn't remember after that. And she looked at the ambulance bill. 57 minutes to go over 100 miles. A code 10, I think they call it, went out, and every light between Iron Mountain, Michigan and Green Bay, Wisconsin was blocked by a trooper, a city policeman, a sheriff, a deputy. The ambulance never slowed down. My son followed it up to 115 miles an hour and had to back off, and it was still pulling away. So here's Charlene. I'm in the air between Los Angeles and Minneapolis. Here's Charlene, and the miracle story is too long to tell. But when I got to the hospital, the PA kept coming out and saying, Charlene is still alive. Still in surgery, 8 hours plus surgery. And then finally the surgeon came out late that night and said, I want to meet with the family in the conference room. And the surgeon said, all I can tell you is Charlene is alive. We don't know brain damage because of the amount of blood loss. We don't know paralysis because of where the tears took place. But she is alive. That's all I needed to hear. And then in the morning, the green light came on for me to go into critical care, and I honestly did not recognize her. Pipes and tubes and so swollen, and they said, yeah, she's right there. I said, I don't think that's my wife. So I got closer, and as I got closer to the bed, she started moving her arm. She sensed that I was there, half conscious, and she moved her hand, and I said, she wants to write something. So the nurse held up a yellow legal pad and handed her a penny. She wrote aneurysm with all these pipes, aneurysm clearly and accurately. I said, there's nothing wrong. She's smarter in a coma than I am in good health. I said, you hand me a pen, write aneurysm. It would be misspelled and you wouldn't read it. She was paralyzed on her left side. Didn't know how long the paralysis would last. And she couldn't speak. She had no voice for months. August, September, October, November, December, January. I think just after Christmas, she started squeaking. And I said, was that you that squeaked? And then soon she started. Now she got her voice back an octave lower. But if you were to see her now, you would know nothing had ever happened. And they called her the miracle girl. And I'm not going to go into the whole story on that, but it was an absolute. And you know what? I haven't taken one second for granted with her. On Father's Day, don't take one second for granted that everything is going to be always like it is. Not so. The next phone call could change everything. Did any of you know the Pegram family from Greenville, South Carolina, Dennis and Ina Pegram? 9 children. I think you may beat them, I think. But they have 9 children. And Josh was our music leader for 3 years at our Northland camp. And they come up for the 3 kids work there full time, and then the Dennis and Ina brought the kids up, and Dennis was a businessman. He was not a preacher. He was a businessman. And so he brought the family there for family vacation so they could all be together. And it was a great time. Dennis came to me Tuesday morning. By Tuesday morning, he knew every person. I think there were about 80 family units at family camp that week, probably about 500 campers, and by Tuesday morning, he knew everyone who had no testimony of salvation of the moms and dads. And he came to me Tuesday morning and said, let's be aware, there's some unsaved men here, some unsaved women here, and so be aware of that as you're teaching. So I was aware of that, and I would make a point to try to engage with those people during the week. And I remember on Thursday night, I was going out the door, and Charlene will remember this. I said, honey, I'm going to change my message on Thursday night. I changed my message, and I preached on this message called Tools That Build Relationships. And the one message, I parked on this thing of time. And I said, don't take for granted the person sitting next to you in the morning is going to be there when the sun goes down. Too much to assume. Take advantage. Say, I love you while it can still be heard. Kiss while you can still be felt. Don't wait to fill funeral parlors with flowers that should be given now. Hug them while they're still warm. And I preached on these tools. Then Friday morning, we had the regular chapel time and then dismissed. There was an afternoon basketball, family basketball. So Dennis was getting all of these people and this sheriff or this policeman and his wife from Illinois who were not saved. Young, very handsome young couple. Got them coming in to play ball and got everybody in excited in the gym to let's get in this family playtime. And Dennis was running down the court. He went up for a rebound and his soul went straight to glory and his body crumpled down on the floor. Charlene and I were driving back from Iron Mountain, and we got a call. It said Dennis Pegram had a heart attack But when we met the ambulance, it was going slowly with the lights off. And I said, well, Dennis is gone, obviously. So we dropped her brother and sister-in-law off, and we went back up to the hospital, walked in. Here's Dad on the gurney, the emergency room, tennis shoes on, gym shorts, shirt. Man who ran regularly, man who ate healthily, extremely good condition. When we came, three of the kids were running out of the hospital room, almost unbelievable. This isn't true. This is not true. This can't be true. And as Charlene and I went through, we hugged each of the kids and wept. And then I came to Ina, and Ina grabbed me. She said, you know, the last thing Dennis and I did, when you dismissed chapel this morning, he said, Ina, let's pray and let's thank God for the time he has given us. Thinking, of course, they'd have at least another 30 years together in their marriage and another 30 years watching their children grow and then their grandchildren and the grandchildren came along. But what he was doing is expressing his heart of gratitude for what God had given them, not knowing that he had but about 3 hours to go. And Ina said, that's the memory I have. And as we talked to the kids and prayed with those kids, and they maintain such a tremendous testimony to this day. Ina has been such a sweet testimony. This was not a preacher. This was a businessman. But that quickly, Dad was gone. And I preached closing message on Friday night on the topic of death. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. They rest from their labors and their works do follow them. I said, there's a restriction in death's blessing. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. You can't stand by a coffin and say he's in a better place unless he knows the Lord. They rest from their labors. So there is a rest in death's blessing. Ever just get bone weary in this life? Ever just get bone weary? Charlene and I, we are getting new, we are getting old when we bought bird feeders. And we sit in our room, sit, drink coffee, and watch birds. And once in a while I'll say, isn't it a blessing to know when God knows when one of them fall, how could he not care about us? Amen. In this stretch of time that we have. How seriously do we take the time when Ephesians says redeeming the time, knowing the days are evil? What is redeeming? Buy that back. When we were born, we were in darkness. There's a price tag to pay to get time from darkness into light. You have to buy it back from how you were born. And that is a determined decision that you have to make of how we are going to live our lives and how we're going to live our time. I think as a dad, sometimes I feel like I still poorly manage my time. Wearing 5 different hats and trying to run ministries and trying to be the president of a college and trying to be the parent and trying to be, and you have no idea what all that means living on a telephone. President of a Bible college, normally about 8 years lifespan is about what it is. And I had been plowing at it for almost 20 years in that topic, and I'd get phone calls. People wanted to know. One kind of got to me, wanted to know my position on Santa Claus. So I got this letter and I dictated it to my secretary, Jen Schmidt, who was my secretary at that time, Dr. Ernie Schmidt's wife. I started a letter, Dear Sir, Santa Claus is an overweight man who has been very good to me through the years. And I said, don't send that. I said, that was my flesh. And I said, let me give some time to pray. So then I got into Revelation about how the ho-ho is the, and the big boots are. So I got Santa Claus out of Revelation. But I was thinking sometimes, what? And so you get bone weary sometimes. But you get up every day. When Charlene and I wake up in the morning, and as we drink our coffee and as we pray, we try to include this. We acknowledge that we acknowledge His ownership and lordship of our lives. We acknowledge we are dead people on furlough, and God has given us a furlough of another 24 hours, and we want to live that furlough in 1 hour blocks for God's glory and for others' good with Bema accountability in mind. To try to live our lives in that way, knowing this block of time must be spent in 1 hour blocks, and we must redeem that time, knowing that the days are evil. And when it says, husbands, dwell with them, seemed like a strange command. You married her, now live with her. You know what Deuteronomy 22:5 says? Or 24:5? Would someone read Deuteronomy 24:5 for us? Someone with a good booming voice, or even one of you men if you can find it faster. Deuteronomy 24:5. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
When a man hath taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home for 1 year and shall cheer up his wife, which he hath taken.
So when he married, under Mosaic law, what was he required to do? One solid year, all he had to do was to spend time with his wife. You know why? Because time to a woman is security. And for her to be joyful in that relationship, it demands time. So many times we as men and we as dads, we run, we get on our horse and run off in all directions. And sometimes our wives and our kids are the ones who are hurt by that direction. And under Mosaic law, he was commanded to spend time to stabilize that relationship. You know what builds love and trust in a body of believers? Time together. Forsake not the gathering of yourselves together, as the manner of some is. Those people who say, I don't need church, I worship God on the lake. Somebody might think you're fishing. And you know what? Our hearts can go so cold when we opt to separate ourselves from fellowship with God's people. How does a husband-wife relationship grow? Time. The less time, the less trust. Body of believers. Man to God. Husband to wife. Believer to believer. Dad to son. There has to be that focus. I remember my son Stephen, I was riding with him. He was, I think, about 14 years old. We are driving, and I said, Stephen, I want to ask you a question and be honest. I said, what don't you like about me? I said, please be honest. He said, there's nothing I don't like him. I said, Stephen, you're not going to hurt my feelings. He said, Dad, there's nothing I don't like about you. And I asked one more. He said, well, you are gone a lot. I said, well, I'll change that. I canceled as much as I could cancel. But then when I realized I could not hold my position and cancel anything else, we took him out of school for a year and he traveled with me. Here in Jerusalem and at the Wailing Wall, which he liked that one a lot better than the one we had at our house. But you know, we still go back to those times when we had those times, because I feel like I feel if I could go back and reorganize my time, how much differently I would spend it. But yet, time has been pictured as a bald head with a lock in the front. If you don't grab it when it's coming towards you, there's nothing to grab on in the back. Some of you can relate to that. Time, the tool of living together. Secondly, dwell with them according to knowledge. Think. Not only spend time, think. Live with her and learn about her. And I think one of the great responsibilities in a relationship building, whether it's a father with a son, a husband with a wife, a believer to a believer, we must learn each other's needs. When a man learns his wife's world and a wife learns the husband's world, there is a better understanding when those worlds meet at the end of the day. But if a husband comes home never understanding the wife's world, and never understanding the wife, not understanding what the husband goes through, then there is almost clashes, because he will walk in and the house is in disarray. She has the four kids. And in love, he says, honey, do you have trouble organizing your time? That goes over like a piano in the Church of Christ. That is not going to help. Stop and think her world. And then she says he's going to be coming home 15 minutes. What has he been through and thinking like that all the time? We don't understand everything. I mean, there are still things about women I don't understand. They have decorations. I was raised in the tip of Upper Michigan. No modern conveniences, four bedrooms and a path. If the walls were standing, that was a good house. I was never into interior decorating. My dad worked copper mining over 40 years. I never remember Aynard coming home and saying, Sophie, that grouping. You had a home interiors party. That was never said in our home. I don't think that ever came from my dad's lips. So when we got married, now we're heading on 50 years. My wife said, well, that wall would need something there. And we lived in the parsonage there by Calvary in Roseville, Michigan. And I said, well, put something on it. I thought it looked fine. Well, I started learning along the way to be more sensitive. And there are still some things I don't quite understand. My brother Earl and I used to work on our buses in our bus ministry. And we'd do the mechanic work. I'd come in with hands dirty and I'd go in the bathroom. And there was a dish with blue soap balls in that dish. And I took that and I said, these things don't lather up. She said, you're not supposed to use them. Now, what are they in the bathroom for? If they're not usable, non-functional soap in the bathroom, what good is that? Well, Charlene didn't tell him, and this another lady explained this to me, and I still take this by faith. And if that makes you feel better, ladies, I'm very happy as a husband and as a father. You know what this lady explained? She said the blue soap balls are there because it pulls the blue out of the wallpaper. I thought, so I go in there. Sure enough, come on, blue, you can do it. I had no idea. Most quiet room in the bathroom, I had no idea all that was going on in there. And if you believe that, bless your heart. It didn't make any sense to a youper, what they call us. But I learned. Do it anyway. Buy the things that are nice. But it's a learning process. And you know what? God does give wisdom to know each other's needs. And you know, if we live self-centeredly, we don't even take time to think about what does that person need? What does that believer need? When somebody walks through the doors of a church on Sunday morning, how is that relationship going to be built? How do you know what world that person has been living in? What hurt has been experienced? What rejection has been felt? And a slight touch from you and an encouraging word because you were thoughtful enough to go and say, we are sure glad you're here. How can we pray for you? I've been in restaurants with some people, and I like what they do. A waitress comes up, and after the orders are taken, they'll ask, you know, we're about to pray for the food. Is there anything you need us to pray with you about? And the ones who have done it said it's been amazing on what people start telling. And will come back and tell more. Most of the people in the world thinks nobody else doesn't care anything about anybody but themselves. And they, especially waitresses, they're not working in waitressing because this has been their goal in life. Most of them are working because they realize if I don't, the kids can't stay in Christian school. If I don't, my kids are not going to have because my husband's gone. And we need to learn how to think not only for us within the body, but also, but especially a dad being thoughtful about the needs of his family. And how and then giving honor unto the wife. Tenderness. The same word is given to the children. Honor your father and your mother there in Ephesians chapter 6. That same word is being used. So live and love and learn. And this loving is a 1 Corinthians 13. Ever notice 1 Corinthians 13? All 15 descriptions of love are verbs, not nouns. They're activities. And how we need to build that in is as men and as dads, and say, as a dad, am I spending time wisely? Am I learning the needs of my kids? Am I learning the things that my wife needs? Am I learning as a believer? And is there tenderness within? I hope on Mother's Day or Sweetest Day, Valentine's Day, I don't know if some ladies are not even into flowers, but one guy came home, 30 years of marriage, he came home with one rose and presented it to her for the 30th anniversary. And she said, that's thoughtful, but one rose, he said, the light changed. And so those of you around cities, you know, they you pull up to a light and they're selling roses. You're pushing dollars out and they're pushing roses in for the light. Isn't that tender and thoughtful? The light changed. But you know, even that communicates. I thought of it. We were doing a men's conference and I said, on the way home, get your wife some flowers. One guy said, well, she'll think I got the idea from here. I said, so what? That's why she paid for you to come. But learn that love relationship. Study 1 Corinthians 13. And then giving honor as unto the weaker vessel. The need to be a testimony, a leader. So you live, you learn, you love, and you lead. Dads, are we the ones handing out the gospel tracts? Are we the ones witnessing to the person at the gas station? Are we the ones who they see in prayer? Are we the ones who they see in Bible study? The most securing thing a wife can have is a godly husband. And the most securing things children can have is a godly father. The testimony as unto the weaker vessel. Paul said, be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ. Not Paul saying, I am important, follow me. No, he said, I am following Christ. You follow me as I follow Christ, the model that we have in our lives as dads. And then I close with one more that I think is a great relationship builder, and the tool of laughter from Proverbs. Laughter does good like a medicine. And to keep the T's consistent, I call it the tool of being tickled. Just learning to laugh. And I was doing a men's conference, and I said, I don't trust people who can't laugh. I don't think they're holy as much as they're bitter. So a guy came up to me afterwards and said, I don't agree with you. And I almost said, no kidding, Tonto. He was back there. And I thought, no, I quit looking his way. I'm insecure as it is. I said, well, all I'm saying is what Proverbs says. I believe it's a healer. I don't know anything about medicine. About a year later, I get a letter from him, and there's a big article from one of the Detroit papers from the medicine section about what laughter does to put healing into the system. And he had a little note in the corner, you were right. I see him last year, actually, at a conference where we were speaking at a church. And he was actually smiling, which was a tremendous growth in his life. I don't say laugh at silly things. I was in Redding, California. We had been there for a 10-day meeting. And on the first end of the first Friday, a guy came up and said, boy, you tell a lot of jokes. I said, I do. I said, could you tell me one that I told this week? I said, I've been here since Saturday. It's Friday now. And I said, think real hard. He said, well, I can't think of any. I said, no, because I didn't tell any jokes. He said, well, we were laughing. I said, I describe life slightly exaggerated. I don't stop and tell a joke. I describe life slightly exaggerated. Life, there's nothing funnier going than reality. But you have to add a little drama to reality. But that's what gets us so tickled. How many of you get together at Christmas with the whole family? Got together. Did you laugh a lot? Table games. I built a table 3 inches thick. In fact, Neil Cushman helped me. I cut the wood with my mill and three. I mean, you can play full contact Monopoly on that. And boy, you talk about laughter when all the family's in and all the cousins are playing and all the railing accusations against the banker, and that's going till 2 and 3 in the morning. You talk about laugh. They brought an electronic Monopoly game. They took it back. Number one, you can't cheat. And number two, it's no fun because you don't make railing accusations. You just manage money. That's what good is that? But you do have to have a lot of good activity. You know what? There's nothing healing. I was raised in an unsaved home. And there was a lot of tension. Mom and Dad never separated but argue regularly. And my brother Earl and a lot of us developed a sense of humor. Everybody I see with a sense of humor, I noticed, I bet they came out of a hard background of some kind. So we would contribute to Mom and Dad's arguments, things that they didn't think of. And so we would help this along the way. And we developed a sense of humor through this. Sometimes we'd holler things down through the register. And so you can get bitter and then go through life and saying this as I was raised in a dysfunctional home. I preach one message. Can God use a teenager from a dysfunctional family? And I preach on the life of Joseph. And if you can find a more messed up family than Jacob's, please let me know. Have any of you kids ever been sold by a brother? I mean, people from the worst backgrounds. No, that you come home from summer camp and your brothers are grinning. We sold you to Cuba. And you'd be texting on that in the back of that pickup heading for Miami. You would be giving people a piece of your mind. Joseph was on that camel. This is different. You know, this is not how I planned today. But you know, it's all where the focus is. And if we can learn as a body of men, that's why I decided tonight, I had another message I was going to preach, but I thought, you know, taking these simple things that build us as a body of believers, build us as a family, cause us to realize, go home and examine, what is my thinking? What am I learning? How am I leading? How am I spending my time? Or if the phone rang and one of those relationships was over, what would you be rethinking? Then start thinking it tonight. And say, as a dad, I need to do this. And you say, there are a lot of corrections need to be made. You're with a body of believers who can help you in a major way with those corrections. A church is a place where people can come and hurt out loud and be encircled by loving Christians who would take and pick up the burden of your needs. And as fathers, we have lessons for these tools, but as believers, we have lessons for these tools as well. And you better do the hugging tonight while you can, and the talking when you can, and the flowers when you can, because there's coming a time when it won't be. And so may God give us wisdom and grace to live the way we ought to live, and to lead the way we ought to lead.